And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X-1.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
It's about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on January 17th, 2016. Program 44 of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. Lisa Wolf to the right of me. Lisa, weren't we here about 24 hours ago?
Less, actually. We were here just a few hours. Feels like a few minutes ago.
Yeah. So we're here Saturdays and Sunday nights. If you've been joining us for the last 40 weeks or so on Sunday, hey, guess what? We're on Saturdays as well. Don't miss our Saturday show. They have us doing duty on 11 o'clock till 2 o'clock in the morning every Saturday and Sunday. Classic radio is what we do. It's our bag.
And, of course, different classic radios on Saturdays and Sundays. Some
right.
People thought maybe the same. Absolutely not.
No. All brand
different
new shows.
Show,
yeah.
Different radio.
Tonight, we're going to tune in to the Burns and Allen show from 1949. And then it's a great episode of Crime Classics with the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. So it's a terrific, terrific historical drama. Then Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. All of this is brought to you in part by our sponsor, Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming computer-animated action film Zootopia as a fast-talking fox who goes on the run when he's framed for a crime he did not commit.
All right, if you want to win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza, call in and tell us who this celebrity is Lisa's talking about. Here's a hint. He played Sandy Patterson opposite Melissa McCarthy in the 2013 comedy Identity Theft.
Here's my license with my name right there. Sandy Bigelow Patterson. Gotcha.
All right, if you know who that celebrity is, call us right now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Win a Lou Malnati's Pizza, and we'll find our winner after this break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
Here's my license with my name right there. Sandy Bigelow Patterson. Gotcha.
We have Philip on the line from Oak Park. Hey, Philip.
Hello, how you doing?
Great, we're glad you called in. Can you tell me who that voice is from Identity Theft and who will be in Zootopia?
Jason Bateman.
You are right, and you are a winner, and you are so lucky because you have won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can visit one of their Chicagoland locations and check them out at loumalnatis.com. I hope you enjoy pizza on us, okay?
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Philip. All right, it is time, Lisa, for some classic radio. How does that sound?
I think that's why we're all here.
All right, so a lot of people have been asking for comedies. I guess I've been kind of stingy doling out the comedies lately. I don't want to do that. I want people to laugh, right?
You're a little stingy.
George Burns, Gracie Allen, they were on the radio a long, long time. And came to radio in 1932, lasted 18 seasons on the radio till 1950, and that was the time they moved to television. But Gracie retired in 1958 and passed away in 1964. And George tried to continue on TV without Gracie, but it just didn't work. He went on to star in the Oh God films and really continued to work until his passing at 100 years of age. And his radio shows, TV show, they were in the movies. So just a terrific, terrific comedy, lighthearted kind of comedy, all kinds of guest stars on it as well. This is going back to February 19th, 1948. It's called Keeping George from Decision Making. It's sponsored by Maxwell House Coffee, as heard on NBC. Let's enjoy part one of The Burns and Allen Show.
Another cup of Maxwell House coffee, George?
Sure. Pour me a cup, Gracie.
You know, Maxwell House is always good to the last drop.
And that drop's good, too.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen. With yours truly, Toby Reed, Gail Gordon, Elliot Lewis, Hans Conried, Meredith Wilson and the Maxwell House Orchestra, and Bill Goodwin.
For America's Thursday night comedy enjoyment, it's George and Gracie. And for America's everyday coffee drinking enjoyment, it's Maxwell House. Always good to the last drop.
Well, as we look in at the Burns home today, we find George glancing through the afternoon newspaper.
Say, look at this. Meat prices are still dropping. Pork is down, beef is down.
Oh, yeah, but you don't have to worry, darling. You're married to a pretty smart little girl.
What do you mean?
Well, I saw this thing coming 10 days ago, so I stocked up before it happened.
Gracie, you didn't.
Yes, I did. They don't catch me napping. Let the meat keep on going down. We're set. I've got enough in our icebox to last us a month. Now, I got it right at the peak.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, sir. You gotta get up early in the morning to stop little Gracie.
Now she tells me. Look, Gracie.
And you know something I found out, George? Businessmen respect a shrewd buyer. Now, this morning, Mr. Jones, the butcher, took me aside and he said, look, Mrs. Burns, steak is still dropping, but any time you want it at the old price, it's okay.
This is murder.
Murder. Well, George, you don't sound very appreciative after all the money I saved you.
How do you figure you saved me money?
Oh, now, really, dear, surely you can add and subtract? Now, look, I spent $50 on meat.
Yeah.
I put it in our icebox.
Yeah.
Today, that meat is worth $30. Now, how much is 30 from 50?
20.
Well, what's that, hey?
But you didn't save 20. You lost 20.
Oh, George, pay attention. Now, I'll explain it
again. I'll explain it to you. Now, listen. 10 days ago, you spent $50 for meat. Today, you could buy the same meat for $30. Now, did you make money or lose it?
My, you're handsome today.
Don't change the subject.
I've never seen you look better.
Now, Gracie.
Compared to you, I'm a dog.
Don't think you could flatter your way out of this, young lady. Now, listen to me. I put up with your silly...
Oh, no, George, please. You mustn't get excited. Remember your appendix.
Appendix? Had my appendix out 10 years ago.
I know. Remember?
Well, there's no use talking to you. I'll see you later. Can't you do something for her, Dr. Miller? She'll drive me crazy.
Well, George, I started to psychoanalyze Gracie, but she called it off. Said she was afraid people might think there was something wrong with her.
I see.
Too bad, too. She told me some absolutely fascinating stories about her childhood. Did you know that at the age of 4, she played Haydn and Chopin?
Haydn and Chopin? That's amazing.
That's what I said until she explained it. That's a game where if you caught Haydn and show your pan, you're it.
Chopin. Might have known.
You know, George, this buying meat at high prices might have been influenced by her father. She told me how he failed in the meat business.
What happened?
Well, you know how some butchers put their thumb on the scale.
Yeah.
Gracie's father used to sit on the scale and hold the meat in his lap.
What a family.
Some very peculiar things happened to her parents.
I know. I married one of them. Do you think you can help her, Doctor?
Well, I can, George, if you can get her over here. Let's see. Does Gracie dream much?
Quite a bit.
That'll be the excuse. Tell her to come over and have me interpret her dreams. When I get through interpreting them, she'll be all straightened out.
Wonderful. And above all, Tell her that she must never make a decision.
Leave it to me.
Doc, I don't know how to thank you. Here, let me pay you something.
Oh, George, please put away that checkbook. I'm your neighbor. I know you too well to accept a check.
Well. Well, thanks, Doc.
You'll pay me in cash.
I thought so.
Where did you go, dear?
Oh, just out for a little fresh air. Say, Gracie, been having any dreams lately?
Oh, yes, I have, George, and such silly ones. I worry about what happens to my mind at night.
And I'm on the day shift.
Huh?
Nothing, nothing.
Oh.
Tell me about the dreams you had.
Well, last night, I had a real nightmare. I dreamt I was walking down Hollywood Boulevard with no clothes on. All I was wearing was a hat. Oh, was I embarrassed.
Well, I'll bet you were.
Well, sure, it was last year's hat.
Why don't you run over and tell your dream to Dr. Miller?
Oh, George.
That man will interpret it for you.
Nah, I wouldn't tell him a dream like that.
Well, you don't have to tell him you had it. Tell him it was someone else's.
Oh, but it's such a silly dream.
We all have silly dreams. Look at me. Last night I dreamt that I won a golf match with a one-legged kangaroo.
Oh, that is silly.
Oh, sure.
Oh, imagine you winning a golf match.
Yeah. Now, run over and talk to Dr. Miller.
Well, all right. It would be fun to know what dreams mean.
Sure, I'll see you later. Hello, Doctor. This is George. It worked. Gracie is on her way over to tell you her dreams. Yeah. Now, she'll pretend it isn't hers, but it is. Anyway, you know what to tell her, and pour it on.
That's right, Gracie. Just relax and tell me your dream.
Oh, this isn't my dream, Doctor.
Oh, sure. I understand. We'll just say it's the dream of a certain party, huh? Now, what was the dream?
Well, this certain party was playing golf with a one-legged kangaroo.
Golf with a one-legged kangaroo. Very revealing.
Really?
Oh, definitely. Gracie, the person who had that dream has the mind of a child.
Oh, Doctor, you're wrong.
No, wait. The person who had that dream also looks as young as a child.
Oh, boy, are you wrong.
But the person who had that dream is married to someone who is very wise and clever.
Well, that's funny. Now you're right.
And I'm right in the other things, too, Gracie. The person who had that dream should never make a decision.
Really, Doctor?
Absolutely. Any decision that person makes is sure to be wrong.
Oh, thank you, Doctor. I promise you that person will never make another decision.
There was only one Gracie Allen, Lisa Wolf.
I'm hoping everybody's loving the comedy, because I know we've been asking for them. I've been asking for them. So
absolutely,
I had to
Burns
make that happen for you,
yes,
Carl.
Yes, Gracie Allen right there, along with Hans Conried. Hans Conried did a ton of radio, and he did a ton of voiceover work in cartoons. Very recognizable voice on Hans Conried there. This is from February 19, 1948, the Burns and Allen Show, and we'll get back to it in just a few minutes. I want to remind our listeners, and we had so many posts of cats put up by Mike Estella this week, tons and tons of people, and I really appreciate it. We have a drawing here, and Lisa's going to tell you all about it. It's sponsored by Cats Pride.
Yes, it's nearing the end of January. At the end of January, we will have a drawing, and if you send us a picture of you with your cat, with your name and cat's name and city and state, to catspridephoto@gmail.com, email that to us, and we will have a drawing at the end of the month. Dan Jaffe, CEO of Cat's Pride, will be here in our WGN studio. He will pick one lucky winner who will win an entire year supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, best on the market. So that is a... There we go. That's a very valuable gift.
That's a happy cat right there.
Cat's Pride cats are the happiest cats.
That's true.
So we're hoping you'll continue to send in your pictures to catspridephoto@gmail.com. We will have a drawing at the end of the month, and you could be a winner.
This is the way I look at it, right? Somebody wins every single month.
I mean, somebody wins the Powerball, too, but they have a way better chance of winning some Cat's
Pride.
Like a
good trillion zillion better chance
of
winning.
And we do this every single month. So even if it doesn't work out for you in January, keep sending it in.
And it's done live. We have a drum roll. Dan Jaffe comes in here, picks a name. And, you know, it's not like it's thousands and thousands of names. I mean, it's in the hundreds. So you have a really good chance of winning. So
and we have a drum roll, right, Dan? So that's what it's all about.
Yes, we do have a drum roll. I'm pretty positive of that.
We can work that out.
So make sure you send in your picture of you and your cat. And if you don't want to be in the picture, that's fine. And we love stories about your cats, too.
We do.
And we post it on our Facebook page. Your picture of your kitty cat will appear in our WGN Radio Theater Facebook page, right?
Exactly.
Right?
Famous cat.
All right. Okay, very good.
All right.
You know what, Lisa? Last night when we were on the air here, because we're on Saturdays and Sunday nights, 11 to 2 in the morning,
yes,
WGN
I know.
Radio Theater.
I'm here.
Just in case you didn't know.
I know that.
That was you here?
It was me, and I'm still here. I don't even feel like I left.
It wasn't a Stepford wife?
No, definitely.
It was actually
you. The wrong girl.
Okay, good. So here's the thing. We asked our listeners to like us. We said we'd really love to have some likes, and we had like 50 likes.
Yeah, we had 49 likes, if you want to be exact. I mean, you know, just
and you know me, I'm always an exaggerator. So we had 49 likes.
That's
a lot of likes, and I really want to thank our listeners. But you know what? Let's see if Sunday...
We had 51 now. Oh, okay. I just checked. We're at 51. We have 1,152 likes, and we'd really like to get to 1,200. Is that what you're trying to say?
Let's see if we can get more on Sunday than Saturday. Let's try it.
Let's just have everybody go to our Facebook, make sure you like us, and we'd be so happy if you give us some comments and feedback. Let us know what you'd like to hear, what you love about the show, not so much what you don't like, but only really what you like about the show, and your favorites, and we would love to, you know, play those for you.
You know I'm terrified of technology. You know that, right?
You're just terrified.
But I will say this Facebook thing of the WGN Radio Theater Facebook, I'm liking it. Lisa reads me the posts.
I do. Like, he's a child. I sit and I read them to him aloud.
I don't know how to go on.
Story.
I don't know how to go on Facebook.
But we really do appreciate the posts and the messages and the likes, and we'd really love to hear from you.
It's a way for us to connect with our audience, and they can let us know what they want to hear.
They're like our family.
So please do log on to Facebook and just check us out at WGN Radio Theater. When you do, please like us. We would love that.
We want to be liked.
All right, let's get back now to this February 19th, 1948 broadcast of the Burns and Allen Show.
Come in.
Howdy, little man.
Oh, hello, Mr. Judson.
See, I just got back from a ranch in Texas, and I'm a mite dusty. Could I run your vacuum cleaner over my suit?
Vacuum cleaner? Wouldn't it be easier to brush it off?
This is Texas dust. I want to save it.
I say.
Yeah, I like to put it on my face after shaving.
Like talcum powder.
Yeah, only this is softer.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, it smells better,
It smells
too.
Better,
yeah.
too. Okay, I'll get out the Hoover.
Wait a minute. Your vacuum cleaner is a Hoover?
Yeah.
Then let it go. Texas is a Democratic state.
Suit yourself, Mr. Judson.
Yeah. Now, the reason I hurried over here direct from the train was to give you a chance to make some money.
How?
Well, I got a few cattle down home, and right now they're selling at bottom price, $50 a head.
Hmm.
Now, you buy them today, and tomorrow you'll double your money.
Well, I should.
Well, naturally, I couldn't sell you my whole herd, but I could let you have a couple of million head.
Well, I might take 100 head. How do I buy the cattle?
Well, you just pick up the telephone and call Dallas, Texas. The number is Ecstasy 2400. That's my office.
Yes.
If it don't answer, call my ranch, Paradise 2400. Tell them who you are, and I said to let you have 100 head at bottom price.
Well, thanks a million.
Yeah, well, now you do it right away. Tomorrow, them steers will be put on the train for Chicago.
Mm. To the slaughterhouse, huh?
Yeah. They don't slaughter Texas cattle, though. They don't have to.
Why not?
Well, when them steers step off the train and see they ain't in Texas, they die of a broken heart. Well, so long, little man.
Thanks again, Mr. Judson, and goodbye.
Mr. Judson.
Yeah? Why, little lady, what are you doing hiding here behind this bush?
Well, I have to keep an eye on my husband.
At his age?
Oh, absolutely. He's got the mind of a child. Tell me, while you were talking to him, did he make any decisions?
What? Yeah, as a matter of fact, he did. He decided to call Dallas and buy 100 head of steers at $50 a head.
$50 for one head? Oh, that's ridiculous.
What? But, ma'am, that's the bottom price.
Well, it's all right for a bottom price. That's the end with the meat on it.
That's the end with the...
Oh, I like your sense of humor, man.
Imagine buying 100 steer heads and paying for the bottoms. Well, Dr. Miller was right. Poor George doesn't know which end is which. Well, I've got to stop him. It may take drastic measures, but I've got to stop him.
Hi, Gracie. Hey, I'm going to make $5,000. All I have to do is call Dallas.
Put down that telephone, you philanderer.
Huh?
How dare you call another woman?
What other woman?
Stella Dallas.
I'm calling Dallas,
no,
Texas.
No, George, please, don't use that phone.
Why not?
Well, it must be left open for emergency calls, like calling the doctor.
But no one is sick. Gracie, what's gotten into you?
Virus X. Call a doctor.
Oh, stop.
Well, then call the fire department.
The house isn't on fire.
Hand me those matches.
Gracie, cut that out. I'm going to place my call.
Oh, you can't, George. The phone's out of order.
Phone's out of order?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Hello? I can't talk to you now, Meredith. The phone's out of order. That silly Meredith Wilson calling up on a broken telephone.
Gracie, let go of the phone.
No.
I don't like to use my superior strength against a woman, but you force me to tear that telephone out of your hands. Now give me that phone. Please, Gracie, give me the phone.
No.
I said give it here, and I mean it. Oh. Now you see, I dropped it. I just hope nothing happened to it. Oh, holy smoke. The phone is dead.
Oh, you murderer. You killed it.
This is too much. I'm going to take a cold shower. Then I'll go across the street to Jack Benny's and use his phone.
Well, I'll fix him so he can't use Jack Benny's phone. While he's in the shower, I'll take all the change out of his pocket.
Come in.
Hello, Mr. Burns. I'm from the telephone company. Your phone has been reported out of order, and I'm here to fix it.
Wonderful. I can make $5,000 if I call Dallas before the...
Oh, no.
It's you again. The guy with the terrible temper. You'll wreck my phone.
Oh, have no fear, Mr. Burns. Now that I'm with the telephone company, I'm no longer a mad, mad thing. I found myself.
If only you hadn't found me.
I'm so happy with this job.
Please, put the phone down. I'll use carrier pigeon.
Why, this isn't serious. I'll have it fixed in a jiffy.
Don't bother. I'll wigwag. I'll send smoke signals. Don't touch the phone.
I'll just tighten this screw.
I'll walk to Dallas. Forget it.
There, it's fixed. I have placed at your disposal the greatest miracle of science, the telephone.
Good. Now go.
I'm so happy with this job. Now, if you get a hot tip on a racehorse, you can telephone and place $2 on its nose.
But I never can.
The favorite is Bangtail, but you bet on a long shot. Apple Blossom at 50 to 1. You turn on your radio and listen to the race.
But I never...
They're off! It's a Bangtail out in front, and Apple Blossom second by a nose.
But I never...
At the quarter, it's Bangtail by two lengths, and Apple Blossom third by a nose.
But I never...
At the half, it's Bangtail by five lengths, and Apple Blossom fourth by a nose.
But I never...
Coming into the stretch, it's Bangtail by 10 lengths, and Apple Blossom tenth by a nose.
But I never...
The winner is Bangtail by 17 lengths. You laugh! You cheer! You dance around the room! All because I fixed your telephone. I'm so happy with this job!
All right, now go.
You count your money.
Yes.
You're so... Wait, wait.
Something happened.
Wait a minute.
Something. I know. I know.
You bet on the other horse.
Oh.
You lost your $2, and no. It's my fault.
No, 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 I didn't.
Well, bet. I won't fix telephone.
No.
I'll quit this lousy job.
Now go.
Not before I remove temptation from your path.
No.
I'll wreck this telephone.
No.
I'll smash
it. The bottom.
I'll rip it to pieces.
The bottom.
I'll
the bottom. Oh.
There. I saved you $2.
Bill.
Yeah?
Can I call Dallas, Texas on your phone? If I hurry, I can make $5,000.
Oh, well, of course, George. My phone is right here, and you're welcome to use... Well, excuse me. I'll answer that.
Well, hurry, please.
A minute. Hello? Well, yes, this is Dimples. Why, sure, I love you, honey. I love you dearly. Who is it? Oh, Mabel? Hiya, Mabel. A date? Well, let me look at my date book and see what I have available.
What a minute. Hurry up, Bill, please.
Mabel, the first night I have open is the 27th. Is that okay? Well, that's November 27th.
Wow.
I'll see you then, honey. Bye. Now, George, I'll get that Dallas number for you right away.
Oh,
excuse me.
Well,
it's
ringing.
Hello? Yes, this is Dimples. Oh, hello, Gladys. A date? Well, I'm booked up till November 28th, but you can have that. Okay, it's a date. Oh, no, honey, that's November 28th, 1949.
This guy is the mail on a turner.
Goodbye, Gladys.
Okay. Now, look, lover boy, get long-distance operator, quick.
Okay, George.
Hurry up.
Hello? Long-distance operator? I want to call Dallas, Texas, and I want to... Yeah, this is Dimples. Well, Myrtle, how are you?
This is Myrtle.
No, it's Myrtle.
Oh, it's Myrtle.
Yeah, Myrtle, get me Dallas, Texas right away. It's very important.
Hurry up.
You won't? Well, why not? No, Myrtle, I'm not calling another girl. Well, honest, honey, I swear I'm not.
I should have used Errol Flynn's phone.
Myrtle, if I'm not telling the truth, may they come and take my Maxwell House coffee. And you know Maxwell House is the very best in coffee-drinking pleasure, yet it costs but a fraction of a penny more per cup than the cheapest coffee you can buy. Well, you believe me now, huh? Sure. Hey, George, she's getting a Dallas operator.
Good. If I don't get those...
Hello?
Those
Hello, Dallas operator? Wait. Look, I want to... Yeah, this is Dimples. Well, hello, Linda Sue.
Oh, no.
How's every little thing, honey child?
Please, Bill, get the number. It's Ecstasy 2400.
Linda Sue, get me Maxwell House 2400.
Bill, it's Ecstasy.
Same thing, same thing. That's why with more than 1,000 brands to choose from, more people buy and enjoy Maxwell House than any other brand of coffee in the world. You're ringing it, Linda Sue? Okay.
Mr. Judson's secretary will probably answer. Then I'll talk.
Hello, is this Mr. Judson's secretary? Well, just
you.
A moment. I want to put Mr. Burns... Yeah, this is Dimple.
No. Hey, how are you?
Yeah, I'm still with Maxwell House Coffee. And you know something, Ella May? Maxwell House comes to you roaster fresh two ways now. In the familiar blue vacuum tin or in the new ultra vacuum glass jar.
Give me the phone. Hello. Hello. This is George Burns. Mr. Judson said I could buy 100 head of cattle at $50 a head. So get the order in right away.
But Meredith, by the time I followed him to Bill Goodwin's house, he'd already called Texas. That's why I rushed over here to use your phone.
Well, I have Dallas on the phone for you now, Gracie. Here's Mr. Judson's secretary.
Oh, thank you. Hello, this is Mrs. Burns. Cancel that order my husband just made. Goodbye. I've saved him again. I just can't let George make any decisions, Meredith. Dr. Miller says he has the mind of a child.
By Jove, now that you mention it, George has tried to interest me in his childish pastime. He has frequently said, Meredith, why don't you go fly a kite?
If you think that's childish, wait till you hear this. George has been cutting out paper dolls.
Paper dolls?
Yep. Out of Esquire magazine.
Gracie, I've seen those dolls in Esquire, but the publishers made quite a mistake. They didn't print any paper dresses to put on them.
Oh, well, I guess George is too dumb to realize that. But that's nothing compared to the decision about Mr. Judson's cattle. All he wanted to buy was the heads.
No.
Yes, and he was going to pay the same price that Bottom Spring.
Well, that's ridiculous. Heads aren't even half the size.
I wonder what he wanted with them anyway.
Well, perhaps he wanted to hang them on your walls.
Oh, well, if that's it, I guess the heads would have looked better.
George.
Yeah, we must be kind to him and try to make his second childhood a happy one.
Well, he's welcome to come over and play with my electric train.
Yeah. Oh, that would be a treat. During his first childhood, they didn't have electricity. Come to think of it, they didn't even have trains.
Say, here comes George up the walk now.
Uh-oh. Now, Meredith, don't tell him I canceled his order for those cattle heads. It would break his childish heart.
Have no fear, Gracie. My lips are sealed. Enter.
Meredith, have you seen? Oh. Well, there you are, Gracie. What are you doing here?
Just visiting, dear.
That's right, just visiting, dear.
You both sound awfully guilty. I've got a hunch you're hiding something from me. Now, what is it?
That threatening tone will avail you nothing, George. My lips are sealed.
Yes. Don't let them scare you, Meredith.
No form of torture will persuade me to betray our secret.
Stout heart, Meredith.
You may boil me in oil, but I'll never reveal that Gracie called Dallas and canceled your order.
Attaboy, Meredith.
So that's it, huh?
What's it?
Gracie canceled my order.
Oh, you're eavesdropping outside, eh?
Yeah, I'm sneaky. Gracie, why did you do such a thing?
I did it to protect you, George. You see, you have the mind of a child and the body of a man.
I have not.
Well, it's practically the body of a man.
I didn't mean that.
Well, anyway, I told Dr. Miller your dream, and he said you should never make a decision.
You told him my dream? Holy smoke, I see it all now. Gracie, you're the one with the mind of a child and the body of a man.
George, you need new glasses.
Gracie, what?
Say, excuse me for busting in like this, but I've been looking all over for you. Did you buy them cattle, little man?
No, I didn't, Mr. Judson. You see, Gracie...
Well, let me shake your hand. You're a smarter man than I am.
Huh?
Cattle prices has went down again. You saved yourself a passel of money.
I did?
Yeah. How come you were so shrewd?
Well, I merely anticipated the market fluctuation.
Say, you're a financial genius.
Well, I wouldn't limit it to finances. I have an intelligent grasp of all complex situations.
Boy, you got a smart husband, little lady. Thanks to him, you ain't stuck with all that beef.
Well, I may not have any beef, but look at the ham I'm stuck with.
Join us again next Thursday when we'll all be back. George Burns, Gracie Allen, Bill Goodwin, Meredith Wilson, and the Maxwell House Orchestra, and yours truly, Toby Reed.
Good night.
Until next Thursday, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's number one preferred brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop. The George Burns and Gracie Allen Show is written by Paul Henning and Keith Fowler. Now stay tuned in for Noah Webster Says, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
There you have it. That is the Burns and Allen Show from February 19th, 1948. And a host of great supporting characters in there. Gail Gordon, who, of course, was Lucille Ball's foil for many years. Mr. Mooney.
Of course.
Mr. Mooney. And then Elliot Lewis on that. Hans Conried, Bill Goodwin, and Toby Reed doing the announcing, sponsored by Maxwell House Coffee, as heard on NBC. And the great Gracie Allen on there with George Burns. Hope you enjoyed that. In our next hour, we're going to tune into crime classics, The Assassination of Abraham Lincoln. In our third hour, it's a terrific adult Western on Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Stick around. There's our theme song. It's hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. Good morning. It is 12:07 in the morning, Monday morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
And my Lisa Wolf is my co-host here. She's my boss. She's my right-hand man. She tells me what to do, and I do it.
And you don't listen, but
yes.
I try.
Right.
You exactly. Don't listen to anybody.
Dan Long, the best in the business, our producer in the booth there, hitting all the right buttons at all the right time.
You do listen to Dan. I'll give you that.
I call him sir.
We both listen to Dan.
I don't want anybody hitting the wrong buttons to make me... I don't need anyone to make me sound any worse than I already do.
I didn't say it. You did.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, had a Facebook person say, hey, you know what? Don't talk so much, Mr. Amari there. You know, let Lisa talk a little bit more. So, you know what, Lisa? I'm done for the rest of the night.
Is that right?
You can have the microphone. I'm
gonna That's completely
hang on. I'm turning...
impossible. There. No, you turned me off.
I'm off.
Oh, good.
And you just do it.
Excellent. Well, I think it's about that time for our sponsor, Celebrity Scoop.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming British spy comedy The Brothers Grimsby about a new assignment which forces a top spy to team up with his football hooligan brother from the town of Grimsby.
All right, if you want to win a $25 gift card to Lou Malnati's Pizza, then all you have to do is identify this celebrity. Here's a hint. He played the title character in the 2006 comedy Borat.
Listen, pussycat, smile a bit.
All right. If you know who that is, give us a call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this short break.
You are listening to the one and only WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that very short movie clip again.
Listen, pussycat, smile a bit.
Smile a bit. Joseph from Lakeview, how are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm guessing you know who that is.
Yeah, when you said Borat. Yeah, Sacha Baron Cohen.
It's a bit of a giveaway. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know what? You are a winner and a lucky winner because you have won a $25 gift certificate for Chicago's best deep dish pizza, Lou Malnati's. Do you like that?
That is so awesome. I appreciate that very much.
I like that, too. That sounds absolutely delicious. Thank you for calling in and congratulations on being a winner.
Do those guys deliver?
Yeah, they do.
Yes. You know, a couple extra bucks. It's worth it. It's so cold outside, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. Right. Enjoy it, Joseph.
Thanks, Joseph. Appreciate you calling in, and congratulations. Okay, that was Celebrity Scoop brought to you by Cat's Pride. And we have one every hour at the beginning of the hour. Okay, it is time now for a very, very cool radio series called Crime Classics. Now, this was sort of a docudrama. It came to CBS June 15th, 1953, ran for one season. It was created, produced, and directed by Elliot Lewis, and it had true crime stories examining crimes and murders throughout history. It kind of grew out of Lewis's personal interest in famous murder mysteries and took a documentary-like approach to the subject, carefully reenacting the facts, personages, and the feel of the time and its period. Lou Merrill portrayed our host, Thomas Hyland, and the series featured radio's finest supporting players. I think you're going to really like this. It's a recreation of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Very cool. And this stars a terrific cast, Barney Phillips, Betty Lou Gerson, Herb Butterfield, Irene Tedrow, and many, many more. William Conrad is in this too. Bob Lamond does the announcing. This is from December 9th, 1953, part one now of Crime Classics.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Hyland with another true story of crime. Listen. This is a dream. This is a portent. This is the shape of things to come. A man dreams of walking down a vaulted and empty corridor.
Soldier. Soldier.
Sir?
Who lies dead here?
Look for yourself, sir. Do you see who it is, sir?
Yes.
Who is it?
It is I.
Tonight, my report to you on the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Hyland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Hyland. It was April in 1865, and it was Washington, D.C. A hero had come into the city. His name was Grant, a general of the time who a few days before had accepted surrender from another general of the time whose name was Lee. So it was a time of victory celebration, of burning candles for prayer and illumination and thanksgiving, of dancing in the streets, of noises and silences, of reunion, of shrill, of tears. The sounds that mankind makes when something is won or lost forever, or returns, or perishes. Yahoo! That was the sound John F. Parker made as he throws a whiskey bottle against the wall of the room. His friend was happy, too.
Open another bottle, Millie.
Sure, Annie. Yeah, here.
Do it.
Now lean back your head.
Slow now. Trickle it.
Open! Open!
I told her downstairs I didn't want to be disturbed.
Ah, Johnny, Johnny, Johnny.
Whoever it is...
I'll send him away.
Send him away.
Yes. Go away. Go away! Go away.
Is John...
Go away.
Get out of my way. Get up, Parker.
Williams, you got no right to...
Now get up. You, you woman.
What do you want?
Where's this stuff?
There.
Nah. Let's go, Parker.
What for? What for?
You got duty tonight.
Oh, no.
You're guarding President Lincoln.
John F. Parker, member of the Metropolitan Police Force of Washington, the District of Columbia. John F. Parker, a rum pot. He was about 35 years old, and he was married. And the laughing lady you just heard was not his wife. He had been in the Union Army for a little while, but was dismissed from it for the good of the war effort. His record shows that he couldn't hold an assignment to any one beat for any length of time, for reasons ranging from sleeping in an alley on his beat or sleeping in a doorway on his beat. This is a man who was assigned to guard President Lincoln. How did this happen? Simply, Mrs. Lincoln wrote a note.
To Provost Marshal James R. O'Bairn, this is to certify that John F. Parker, a member of the Metropolitan Police, has been detailed for duty at the Executive Mansion by order of Mrs. Lincoln.
Why did Mrs. Lincoln write such a note? No one ever asked her, so I can't say. But we know that John F. Parker, more or less sober, appeared at the White House, and he and Mrs. Lincoln had a small chat.
There are rumors, of course, Mr. Parker. You must have heard them.
Rumors, ma'am?
About Mr. Lincoln.
About Mr. Lincoln, ma'am?
That there are conspirators, and attempts will be made on his life.
Yes, ma'am. Ma'am?
Yes, Mr. Parker?
May I ask a question?
Of course.
Why was I selected to bodyguard Mr. Lincoln?
Because...
Mary, prevail upon him. Prevail upon him.
Well, what's the matter, Mr. Lincoln?
General Grant here...
He's changed his mind.
That's right, Mrs. Lincoln, I have.
Prevail upon him, Mary.
Oh, well, surely, General, the people are expecting you. All over Washington, they expect an appearance from you, and at the theater tonight...
It's impossible.
But suddenly you tell us it's impossible. Why?
I'm going home. I'm going to Burlington.
But tomorrow you can go to Burlington.
Tonight.
General...
Ma'am?
Even the newspapers headline your name above Mr. Lincoln's. Surely for such a privilege you would not disappoint...
I've been long from home, ma'am.
Yes. Yes, you have.
Goodbye, Mrs. Lincoln. Mr. Lincoln.
Yes. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
It troubles me.
What does?
So suddenly he changed his mind. Strangenesses are...
Mr. Lincoln.
Yes, Mary.
This is your guard. His name is John Parker.
How do you do, sir?
Mr. President.
I did not wish to appear rude, sir. In truth, I did not see you. This...
You may go, Mr. Parker.
Mary. Oh,
what if he won't go to the theater with us? What matter? We'll ask that young couple, that Major Rathbone you seem so at ease with. We'll... What is it, Mr. Lincoln?
Melancholy, worn thin, the infinite sadness...
But there's victory now,
no,
and...
No, listen. You should know it. For it has lain against me for a week now. Chill and dread. And I fear it.
What are you trying to say?
I dreamed, and now I must tell you of it, for I can no longer bear the coldness and heaviness of it. I dreamed, and this is what it was. There seemed to be a death-like stillness about me. Then I heard subdued sobs as if a person were weeping. I thought I left my bed and wandered downstairs. There the silence was broken by the same pitiful sobbing. But the mourner wasn't visible. I arrived at the East Room, which I entered. There I met with a sickening surprise. Before me was a catafalque, on which rested a corpse, wrapped in funeral vestments. Around it were stationed soldiers who were acting as guards. "Who lies dead here?" I asked one of them. He bade me look for myself. And I did. And I saw that it was I who lay there, dead by an assassin. Mary...
You should not have told me of it.
Mary, Mary, Mary...
You should not have told me of it.
Famous man you'll be.
Nah, Mary.
And we'll drink to it. Bartender, hand us back the bottle. Ah, pour me, famous man.
I will. It's such a toast. It's nothing but another duty.
To guard a president. Now we'll drink to it. Everybody! Everybody!
Shush you, Millie.
John here is going to guard the president.
You just sit down, Millie, and shut up.
Oh, no.
Just drink and shut up.
No. John?
What do you want?
How come I saw in the paper what I did?
What are you talking about?
Today in the newspaper.
About what?
A report on the Telegraph that was in the paper. A newspaper in New York had it that Mr. Lincoln was murdered. He was murdered yesterday.
What?
It's the truth. What it said right in the newspaper, the president had been assassinated.
That's crazy.
Well, I saw it. You get a newspaper. You'll see it, too.
Mischief. That's what it is. Drink your drink.
All righty. That's the first portion of The Assassination of Abraham Lincoln on Crime Classics from December 9th, 1953, and you're hearing it here on the WGN Radio Theater. If you were just kind of tuning in, spinning the dial, as they say, right?
Right.
Well, what's the phrase I sometimes say?
Yeah, that's it.
Spinning the dial? Is
yeah,
that what I say?
Because most people are probably on their WGN Radio app.
And they don't have a dial anymore.
They don't
there's
have
no,
a
there's
dial
not a lot
anymore.
Of dials
no.
anymore. No.
You
I have,
probably have a
I
dial.
I have dials, yes.
But we're going to get you up into 2016 yet.
Yeah, I have lots of dials on my BlackBerry and my horse and buggy that I still drive.
Good. It must be cold out there all the way downtown in your horse and buggy.
And my typewriter. I have a lot of dials on that.
There's dials on your typewriter. I'd like to see that kind of typewriter.
Yeah, you put the paper in.
Oh,
the dial there.
Right.
And my abacus. I still use that a lot,
yes,
too.
Yes, I see it's working well for you and your math skills.
Yeah. So if you were spinning the dial or whatever it else you do to listen to radio shows and you came across the legendary Radio 720 WGN and you heard a classic radio show and you were like, what am I listening to? Let me tell you, it is classic radio shows that we play here on the WGN Radio Theater every Saturday and Sunday night. So back in the good old days of radio, before there was television, this is way back when Lisa was a young whippersnapper. She wore the Knickerbockers. Knickerbockers, yeah. The knickers.
Lederhosen.
With her bockers.
Lederhosen.
And this is before television. You know, the television was invented in the – well, actually, it was invented a lot earlier than people think, but it didn't come into – you know,
it
play
started
really.
Very expensive too, and very few families could afford it when it was first invented.
Right, but people started having televisions in their home in the mid to late 1940s, more like the late 1940s, and then by the early 1950s, kind of everybody started getting televisions. But before TV, it was radio drama. All of the things you would see on television were dramatized on radio, and so with sound effects and music and actors all around a microphone, and they created these pictures in your mind. And that's what we do here on the WGN Radio Theater. We play all of the famous classic radio shows, Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, The Whistler, The Shadow, Boston Blackie, all the detective shows, the westerns. That's what we do here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. in the morning. Lisa Wolf is my co-host, and Dan Wolf is my producer.
Dan Wolf is not
Dan
your producer.
Wolf, try again. Let me try that again. Dan Long is my producer. You know, there's a lot of Dans in my life. There's a lot of Dans. Your
really?
Husband.
There's two.
Your husband. No, I know other Dans.
Do you?
A lot of other Dans. There's Dan Jaffe.
Oh,
right?
There's three.
There's your husband, Dan Wolf.
We already counted him.
I'm counting him again. Okay. That's how important he is. I'm counting him again.
I get my husband and my producer mixed up all the time.
The best in the business, Dan Long. In the booth right there. Okay, sorry about that, Dan. Okay, all right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, Esmeralda. And it is 12:34 in the morning, Monday morning. Lisa Wolf is here, my bubbly Lisa Wolf. Called you bubbly yesterday. You're still bubbly.
Yeah, you also told me all sorts of other things yesterday, too, that I won't rehash.
Yeah, no, we don't want to.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I'll take the bubbly.
If they want to hear some of the things we talked about, they can listen to our podcast.
That's for sure. And you know how they can do that? Carl, tell them how to listen to the podcast.
I do it a different way. I Google it.
You just go to WGNradio.com. You can find WGN Radio Theater, right. And the podcast will be posted because Dan Long posts it shortly after.
You mean
our
your
show
husband
ends.
Dan Wolf doesn't do it?
They kind of look alike. I get confused.
Start doing it if he wants.
Here's what happens.
So I have three Dans, mm-hmm. right? Dan Jaffe, sponsor of this show, very grateful to him. Then I have Dan Long, our producer, very grateful to him because he puts the show on. And Dan Wolf, very grateful to him. Because whenever I get in trouble, he gets me out of it. He's an attorney. He's my attorney.
That's a lot. Three people is a whole lot to be concerned with.
And he has to deal with you every single day of the week.
He's so lucky, isn't he?
He is.
He's one lucky guy, I gotta say.
You got a good guy there. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I know. He's got a good girl.
Dan Wolf.
Dan Wolf.
Okay, should we get back to this?
I think it's time.
All right, let's go back to December 9th, 1953 for the conclusion of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln on Crime Classics.
But it was true. Several newspapers in different sections of the country had it that Mr. Lincoln had been slain, which, of course, was not so. This was late afternoon of April 14th, and Mr. Lincoln was alive, spending time with Mr. Stanton, his Secretary of War, then with his valet, who attended him while he dressed, then with Mrs. Lincoln. Mr. Lincoln was alive, and in good mood.
How nice you look, Mary.
Thank you, Mr. Lincoln. The carriage is waiting.
And Major Rathbun and his fiancée?
At Senator Harris's home. He'll pick them up.
The young lady is very comely.
Yes. We'll be late.
My arm. Thank you, Mr.
Parker, sir.
Mr. Parker. The driver knows where to go, does he not?
Ford's Theater. All right, driver.
It was a raw night, and before they reached the theater, it drizzled a little, then stopped. And all over Washington, tens of thousands of candles burned. Backdrop for victory, for celebration, for remembrance. Backdrop for tears. You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. I would like to speak to you briefly about what I consider to be a fairly uninteresting play. It's called Our American Cousin, a drama in three acts by Tom Taylor. There were characters in it with such names as Lord Dundreary, Captain De Boots, Mr. Buddycombe, and Mrs. Mount Chesington. I would like to give you an example of the kind of entertainment the play provided. One of the ladies says,
"Why, Papa, it's a letter from my dear brother Ned. He writes from Brattleboro, Vermont, that he's quite well and just come in from a shooting excursion with a party of crows. Splendid fellow, 6 feet high."
And Lord Dundreary answers to the effect that he is amazed to hear a bird 6 feet high, that they must be tremendous animals indeed. And the actress answers,
"Oh, I see what my brother means. A tribe of Injuns called crows, not birds."
Now, that's not very sparkling, is it? But this is the play that the president elected to see on the night of April 14th, 1865. When he entered the theater with his party, Laura Keene, the actress playing the part of Florence Trenchard, was speaking her lines in an early scene of Act One.
"Oh, I am fairly out of breath. Good morning, Billy. The leather bag I
Thank you, Mr. Ford. We are always delighted to be guests of your theater.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ford. I'll take care of the president and the major and the ladies.
Where will you sit, Mr. Parker?
There's a chair out here in the hall for me.
Will you? Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
You sit there in a rocker, Mr. President. Mrs. Lincoln, the Major, and you, lady. Right there. And if anybody wants anything, I'll be right outside in the hall.
I thought I could catch him before I reached the house. So off I started. I forgot to ask.
Now, John Parker was a fidgety man, and he knew it. So, to soothe the fidgets, he had a bottle tucked away. It was a dull evening, and John Parker never liked plays anyhow. Just sit, the drone of the play. Walk around a little. Notice that a peephole had been bored into the door of the president's box, and not wonder why. Nor wonder why no other boxes were occupied. Just other people enjoying themselves, not him.
Yeah.
Because it was dreary and his bottle was empty. I would like to say that 5 years later, John Parker was fired from the police for falling asleep under a lamppost. Not for leaving the president unguarded, which he did this night. Left the president and went to the bar across the street.
What will you have, sir?
Whiskey. And oysters, dozen.
Yes, sir. Blue points?
Blue points.
Barkeep?
Be with you in...
Not in a minute. Immediately.
What about my oysters?
Just a second, sir. What can I do for you, Mr. Booth?
Brandy.
Oh, there's another...
Now... Here's your money. The change is yours, barkeep.
Thank you, Mr. Booth.
John Wilkes Booth was 27 years old. He was an actor, had achieved some success in Shakespearean roles. A handsome man, a darling of women, a man who sported black flowing ties and an Inverness cape and an ivory-headed cane. It is interesting to note that he had been a member of the Virginia Regiment, which captured and executed John Brown. It is interesting to note, too, that his father, who was Junius Brutus Booth, was insane. John Wilkes Booth just passed John Parker and went out of the bar and into the street and walked south for 4 blocks to a livery stable. Here, 2 men waited for him.
Mr. Booth, I thought you wouldn't get here.
Whose name was Louis Payne?
I knew he'd get here. Him.
Whose name was George E. Atzerodt?
Him. Can't stop him. Not John Wilkes, nobody can.
How does it go, gentlemen? Are we ready?
Not him. Not him, Mr. Booth.
What is this?
He's not going. Shut up. I'll kill him if you say the word, Mr. Booth.
He'll stop. Just leave him alone. He'll stop.
He told me just a moment ago. He said he's not going through with it.
Yes, he will.
I'll kill him if you want me to.
Don't lust too much for killing, Mr. Payne. Kill those who need it. Only those.
Not that I'm afraid, me. No, no.
Just excited, is that it?
Not going. Not going. That's the word.
You see?
Silence, Mr. Payne.
He'll ruin all of it.
Little man. Little man, you would, too. You'd ruin all of it. You know what you have to do. Have to.
No.
Ask him why. Ask
him. Mr. Payne.
Mr. Payne? But he's got no reasons. Ask him why.
Little man. Little man. Why?
Say, do you... I am at the Kirkwood house in the room near the man, near the vice president, near Andrew Johnson.
Yes.
Near. I see him. Knife and gun I have. Here, here. And in the room, in the place, hit on the door. And when he opens the door, shoot him.
Do it.
Or the knife. No, I can't.
Of course you can.
In my head, I see me doing it to him, and I can't.
Of course you can.
No,
yeah,
no.
You see, little man?
Yeah, no.
Listen to him, little man. Yeah, no. He's mad.
No. As each of us is mad, Mr. Payne. Madness suckles us, and the warmth of it goes down easily. You are mad, and I, and the little man. And he, most honestly, the little man.
Are you trying to say that...
you are insane too, Mr. Payne? Is there doubt of it? You are sworn to kill this night, Mr. Seward, Secretary of State to this country of evil men. And he... little man, tonight you will be a hero. And listen, little man, when it is done, when Andrew Johnson is dead, I will give you a present. A thing that sparkles and shines... and you will love it.
Will it be round?
Round. And you will do what I tell you to do. You see, Mr. Payne? Of course you do. Will it be wasted upon the two of you if I say, we lie deep in fair darkness, yet at our side, glory. Go. Do what you must.
And each of them took a horse from the stable and rode away. This little man, George Atzerodt, became confused and just rode to exhaustion, and he did not kill. And Mr. Payne... he entered the home of Mr. Seward and fractured the skull of Mr. Seward's son and cut the throat of Mr. Seward, so it was feared for a time he would die. And John Wilkes Booth, he rode toward the theater, and a block from it, in a shadow pool that edged the fall of light from a street lamp, Anna Surratt waited there.
John Wilkes.
Yes?
Now the time has come. Now what you're going to do will be done.
Yes.
You on your horse there, and the fever in your heart to do this thing. I cannot tell you now again not to do this thing.
No.
A burning.
Yes.
A hating.
Yes.
How do these things find place among all the tenderness of you? I wish I knew, but I cannot.
No.
Oh, I love you.
And now only a small way more, one block more. And John Wilkes Booth rode it. And John Parker, bodyguard to the President of the United States, he was still in the same bar where we left him, choking down another tumbler of whiskey, drinking his way into history's oblivion. Then Booth was at the theater.
Burned up for...
In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. Abraham Lincoln, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Herb Butterfield was heard as Lincoln, Jack Edwards as John Wilkes Booth, and Clayton Post as John Parker. Featured in the cast were Irene Tedrow, William Conrad, Mary Jane Croft, Betty Lou Gerson, Sammy Hill, Barney Phillips, Roy Glenn, and Junius Matthews. Bob Lamond speaking. And here again is Thomas Highland.
Next week, Shrewsbury, England, in the year 1684. My report to you will be on two people who wanted to be happy. So they killed his wife. It is listed in my files as John and Judith, their crime, and why they didn't get to enjoy it. Thank you. Good night.
Friday nights on CBS Radio, mystery and excitement come to you on two outstanding Stars Address programs, Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, and the 21st Precinct. Join the old investigator, Mr. Keene, taking on his latest baffling murder case, and follow Captain Kennelly and his hard-working policemen in the 21st Precinct on their latest rounds, operating against criminals, killers, vagrants, and swindlers, all in the line of duty. They're on most of these same CBS radio stations this Friday night. Gangbusters go into action Saturday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
All right, that is Crime Classics from December 9th, 1953, The Assassination of Abraham Lincoln, starring Lou Merrill as our host on that show. Thomas Highland, that was his sort of fictional name. It wasn't a real guy. He played sort of a connoisseur of crime, Lisa, and he would tell these stories and true stories from the history, you know, books. And Elliot Lewis, who was a big, big, big fan of history and crime, was the creator of this series, and he did a great job with it. And it was heard on CBS for one season. And I hope you enjoyed Crime Classics. We'll play some more on the WGN Radio Theater. That's the name of this radio show. Every Saturday and Sunday night, Lisa Wolf, my co-host, we play these classic radio shows, and Lisa just loves them, right? Especially the comedies.
Most of them, I sure do.
Yeah.
Well, I chose them, so I picked the ones that I like.
Yeah, Lisa picks them.
So most of the
That's
time.
Not all she picks.
Hey, there's cameras in here.
Let's take a break, and then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. This is the second day in the row, Lisa, that you've been up in the third hour. She tends to kind of nod off about this time.
I am so not a sleeper. Carl's the one that goes to the green room and has a little cat nap on the couch.
Well, because Cat's Pride is our sponsor, so I take a cat nap
so
every once in a while.
So somebody's got to stick around here
My
and
favorite
hold the
villain
fort down.
On Batman, Catwoman.
Okay, well, I got to hold the fort down here.
So you're looking wide awake there. Pretty
well,
good, Lisa.
I took a little nap.
Not bad.
So I'm ready for the show.
Because you want to listen to Gunsmoke in this hour.
I sure do.
Coming
and
your way,
there's
Gunsmoke.
There's a lot of other people who want to listen to it, too.
Yes. You won't want to miss it. It's a terrific Western, and we have that for you coming up. But first, our sponsor segment, Cat's Pride's Celebrity Scoop.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress stars in the upcoming crime drama Triple Nine, about a gang of criminals and corrupt cops who plan the murder of a police officer.
All right. Now, if you can identify this celebrity, you're going to win a $25 gift card to Lou Malnati's Pizza. Here is a hint. This celebrity played Rose opposite Leonardo DiCaprio in the 1997 drama Titanic. All right, if you know who that is, call us 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
You are listening to the one and only WGN Radio Theater. Let's hear our celebrity scoop clip again.
I'm flying! Jack!
And we have Matt on the line from Aurora. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm great. I am guessing you know that clip.
Of course I do. The one and only Kate Winslet.
You are absolutely right. She is a winner. And you are a winner because you have won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's home of the best deep dish pizza in Chicago. Do you agree?
Excellent. And it's also from the best station in Chicago, WGN.
You are absolutely right. You got it. Thank you, Matt. And check them out at LouMalnati's.com and have a delicious pizza on us from a terrific radio station.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
We appreciate you calling and winning and listening to the show. And this is the WGN Radio Theater, which airs on the greatest radio station in the world, as Matt said.
You bet.
WGN. We're here Saturday nights from 10 p.m. until...
No.
I'm sorry, from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m., right?
That's correct.
Listen.
There's too many Dans and too many numbers in your life.
I finally made a mistake.
Yeah, finally. Just once or twice.
It's been 34 years.
So Saturdays and Sundays from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m.
Well, you tune in at 10, you hear Rick Kogan. Right?
I mean, that's good, but it's not the WGN Radio Theater.
This is
that's
true. All right, it's time for, in my opinion, the best Western series on radio. This is from 1952, and Gunsmoke came to radio in this year, 1952. It was an adult Western created by Norman McDonald and John Meston. It was stories in and around Dodge City, Kansas in the mid to late 1800s. It chronicled the adventures of Marshal Matt Dillon, played by William Conrad. You heard Parley Bear as Deputy Chester Proudfoot, Howard McNair as Doc Adams, Georgia Ellis as Kitty Russell. And Dillon was a lonely, isolated man, Lisa, and he was toughened by a very hard life. It was adapted for television in 1955, and it ran until 1974 on TV, entirely new cast, James Arness as Dillon. It was ranked number one on television from 1957 to 1961, but it started on radio, and that's what we have for you now. July 12th, 1952, The Boughton Bride, starring William Conrad. Here's part one of Gunsmoke.
Transcribed. Around Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
It had been some time since we'd had any real trouble. Anything more than throwing a few juiced-up cowboys in jail to sober up for a few hours. And I liked it peaceful for a change. I hoped it'd stay that way. Well, that morning I'd gone to take a few catfish out of the Arkansas. When I got back to the office, I found a note from Chester saying he's at the Alafraganza having a beer.
John.
Over here, Mr. Dillon. Any luck, sir?
Oh, about a dozen, Chester. We'll have them for supper.
Oh, that'll be fine. Oh, I've been telling Mr. Carter here about you, Mr. Dillon.
Mr. Carter?
Robert P. Carter. How do you do, Marshal?
Hello, how are you?
Buy you a drink?
Well, thank you. Yes, I believe I will. I think I'll have a beer.
Bartender? A beer.
Yes, Mr. Carter came in on the stage from Denver last Saturday.
Oh, you live in Denver, Mr. Carter?
Oh, heavens no. New York, Marshal. I've only been west a few months. investing money in gold mines and cattle and the like.
Mr. Carter's very rich.
Oh.
Well, I will be if Mother Nature holds out.
His girl is coming in on the stage today, Mr. Dillon.
Oh, is that so?
My fiancée, Marshal.
He met her in Denver, but she couldn't get ready in time to come here when he did.
Ah, I see.
I had to come ahead on business. Couldn't wait. We'll take the Santa Fe to St. Louis from here.
They're going to be married in St. Louis, Mr. Dillon.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks. But is the stage always this late?
He's worried, Mr. Dillon, with his girl on the stage and all.
It'll be along, Mr. Carter.
You talking about the stage?
Oh, hello, Shiloh.
Shiloh says he's been sitting there by himself all morning, Mr. Dillon.
Since last night, Chester.
You know something about the stage, Shiloh?
Only that it's carrying $50,000 in gold out of Leadville.
So?
Maybe that's why it's late.
What do you mean, man?
Well, if somebody wanted that gold, they'd have to stop the stage long enough to get it unloaded, wouldn't they?
Bandits. He means bandits.
Now hold it, Mr. Carter. You're already bleeding and nobody's shot you yet.
What?
Nothing. Just take it easy. The stage will get here, all right. It's often a little late.
But this man says it might have been held up. Why, there may have been a shooting.
Well, now, he's just daydreaming, that's all.
Wait a minute. Listen.
Huh?
Well, there it is now.
Oh.
See, Mr. Carter, there was nothing to worry about. It got here all right.
Yes.
Marshal! Hey, Marshal, come here.
What is it, Jim?
Got held up, Marshal.
What?
Lost 50,000 in gold.
Where'd this happen?
About 20 miles back near Cottonwood Draw, but...
Anybody shot?
Another shot fired. He tricked you. But
James! Where's James? What? Driver!
Where's the girl who was on this stage? What's happened to her?
That's what I started to tell you, Marshal. There's a tree across the road. We got down to move it. This rider got the drop off us. He's all alone.
Never mind all that. Where's the girl?
He took the gold. Took the girl, too.
What?
He took Jane? You mean to tell me you let him take Jane?
Well, now, mister, there wasn't much choice. He held a shotgun on us. And they're gone before we could do a thing.
Oh, but this is impossible.
Now, take it easy, Mr. Carter. We'll find him.
You'll find him? You were off fishing when it happened. What kind of law is there around here, anyway?
Easy, Mr. Carter.
I took one of the team after, Marshal, but I couldn't get near him. He had an extra saddle horse with him. Put her on that.
I see.
But I don't think he planned on kidnapping that girl. The way it was, he just looked at her and told her to come along.
Did you recognize him, Jim?
No. No, the horses are both sorrels.
By heaven, Marshal, you'd better get her back here at once, or I'll pick this up with Washington. I'll see you disgraced.
Shut up, Carter. Chester, go get our horses and a couple of rifles. I'll get a few more details from Jim here.
Well, don't you want a posse, Mr. Dillon?
No, there'd be too much shooting around that girl. Now, hurry, will you?
Yes, sir, I'll hurry, Mr. Dillon.
Mark my words. You'd better have Jane back here by nightfall, Marshal.
You care to ride along, Mr. Carter?
No. No, I'm not equipped for that sort of thing. I'll take care of matters at this end.
Yeah. All right, now, Jim, now tell me first exactly what happened.
Well, we just come down into the draw about 100 yards from the creek.
Blood-red sun was drooping over the edge of the prairie when Chester and I reached Cottonwood Draw. We rode hard until night fell, and we had to stop and wait for daylight. But with morning, we drew a heavy rain that washed out every track. We rode on anyway. For the next 3 days, we scouted a big piece of that country. But it was hopeless. Finally, we headed back to Dodge. Empty-handed. Bartender, bring me a bottle, will you?
Sure, Matt. Where is she, Marshal? Is she all right?
Carter, I'm sorry.
What? You mean you didn't find them?
Rain washed out their trail first morning. We never picked it up again. They could be anywhere.
You came back without her.
We did what we could, Carter. Now we'll just have to wait for word of some kind. You'll be seen sooner or later.
Wait. Well, I won't wait. This will cost you your job, Marshal. I promise you that.
Look, Carter, if it'd make you feel better, why don't you ride out yourself?
It isn't my job to keep the law around here, Marshal. It's yours.
Yeah.
Hey, Marshal.
Yeah, what is it, Shiloh?
Big Kate wanted to see you when you got back. Asked me to tell you.
Big Kate? All right, thank you.
Come in. Oh. No luck, eh, Matt?
How'd you know, Kate?
I can tell by looking at you.
Yeah, it's thousands and thousands of miles, that prairie. It'd been just luck if we'd found them.
Nobody's blaming you, Matt.
No? Carter is. And I suppose it's hard on him. His fiancée and all that.
Carter's no good, Matt.
Well, I never liked him, but I suppose that doesn't matter.
And I'll tell you why he's no good.
What? You know something, Kate?
Carter's been drunk a lot while you were out. He was bragging to one of the girls last night.
Bragging? What, about what?
Not much, to my way of thinking.
Well, go on.
Well, to make it short, seems Jane's father got into a big deal with Carter up in Denver.
Yeah?
Carter got him tied up good and then threatened to ruin him.
Well, so what happened?
He didn't ruin him. He took Jane instead.
Yeah. Well, maybe she likes him.
You don't know much about women, do you, Matt? You think a boughten bride is likely to be in love with a man?
So that's what I have to bring her back to.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
What can I do, Kate? You just have to wait and see what turns up. I waited. I waited a week. Carter was drunk the whole time, telling everybody how he was going to fix me good. Not doing much about it, except stay out of my way. And things were fairly quiet. Chester and I spent most of our time in the office.
Well, he sure fooled me, Mr. Dillon.
Now, Carter?
Yes, sir. He seemed like such a nice fella. And so rich.
He's rich, all right.
But poor in spirit.
You've been going to church again, Chester.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dillon, last Sunday.
Oh, last Sunday. Didn't it rain last Sunday?
Oh, I like church, Mr. Dillon. But I sure do hate to get all dressed up.
You the marshal?
Yeah, I am.
You've been looking for a man and a woman.
You know anything, mister?
My name's Chad Brown. Just rode in from Satana.
Yeah?
There was a man and a woman about 80 miles back on the trail.
What color horses were they on?
Well, as soon as they saw me, they rode off, so I didn't get very close. But both horses were the same color. I guess maybe saw.
Yeah. Are you willing to ride back with me, Mr. Brown?
I don't know, Marshal. I've got an awful thirst.
That woman's out there against her will.
I'll go.
I'll get our horses.
No, Chester. Be better if you wait here this time. We'll be back in a few days. With luck. Let's go, Mr. Brown.
Return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment.
I don't even have to say it. He said it
he
for
said
me.
He said it for you. So yeah. That way you can't mess it up.
It was Roy Rowan saying that we'll get back to Gunsmoke in just a few minutes. I don't have to say it now.
I heard you. You said that already.
I think I just did
say
it.
You said it like three times.
Okay. Well, I think that everyone knows we'll get back to Gunsmoke in a little bit.
What?
Right?
Did you say something?
July 12, 1952, The Boughton Bride, starring William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. With a terrific cast, as heard on CBS. This is a sustaining broadcast. You know what that meant, Lisa? Sustaining.
We've talked about it a bit.
What does it mean? Do you,
do you
remember?
Yes, I do.
If it was sustaining, it means the network sort of kind of sponsored it. There was not
a
sponsor.
As opposed to advertisers.
Right. And the network kind of just paid the bill for it because they wanted it on their schedule. So this is a sustaining show. You're not hearing any sponsors on this program. You do hear sponsors on our show, though. That's for sure.
That is true.
The WGN Radio Theater. And we'll play a couple of those sponsors right now. Want to remind our listeners that we have a drawing every single month. Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cat's Pride, comes in here, picks a winner, gives away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, and you could be a winner. If you have a cat, just take a picture of your cat. If you want to be in the picture, that would be great too. Email it to us here at catspridephoto@gmail.com. Please include the cat's name, your city and state, and you will be automatically entered into our contest. We'll put your picture up on our Facebook page. Yes, we will. Lisa's saying no. Yes, we will. Why are you saying no? Why are you trying to confuse me?
Well,
she just loves it when she can
disrupt
what I'm doing.
I said nothing.
I was on a roll. I was literally on a roll.
I was just
there.
Looking at you.
Yeah.
With adoration.
Oh, yeah. If looks could kill.
No. Right?
No. I want our listeners to send in a picture and be part
too.
Of this contest. Someone has to win.
Absolutely.
And it could be the person that is listening to this
right
now.
So it'll be in 2 weeks because there's two more weekends.
Dan Jaffe will be here. Pick a winner. Absolutely. And we have to get to 1,200 likes by the top of the hour here. We have 25 more minutes.
Right,
can we get it? Can we do it?
We are at 1172.
Come on, folks. We could do this.
28 and we dance a jig.
We can do this. please go to Facebook and log on to WGN Radio Theater. Like us. And Lisa and I will be doing a jig at the end of the show.
I'm not sure what that is, but I'll do it.
I can't dance at all.
I'll just call you Elaine.
The worst dancer. All right, let's get back to this. The Boughton Bride, July 12, 1952, here is the conclusion to Gunsmoke.
Now, the second act of Gunsmoke.
Chad Brown and I covered the 80 miles in a day and a half. The outlaw's trail headed south for a few miles and then turned northeast, back in the general direction of Dodge. It was hot and still. On the horizon, there were occasional flashes of heat lightning. And then in the distance, we saw the long, low cloud of yellow dust that spelled cattle. A Texas herd trailing north. The kidnapper's tracks led straight into it, and an hour later, we pulled up not far from the swing of the herd. A line of longhorns stretched for several miles across our trail. We watched them, looking for a lag to ride through. All of a sudden, a rider came hallooing down on us.
Hold up! Hold up there! Hold! Hold! Hold!
You ain't aiming to cross that herd, are you?
Have you seen anything of a man and a woman around here, mister?
Was they mounted?
Yeah, a couple of sorrels.
It don't matter. I ain't seen nothing but cattle and cowboys for 6 weeks. Besides, these cattle are plenty uneasy. They've been dry since yesterday morning. And that heat lightning ain't soothing to them.
This herd's crossed the trail of an outlaw and a kidnapped woman, mister.
That's so. Well, you just have to wait. You can ride around a draw back there, but you can't cut through this herd, mister.
Look, I'm a U.S. Marshal out of Dodge, and I haven't got any time to waste. You think we
can...
Well,
I sure appreciate your problem, Marshal, but I can't help you. I'm trail boss of this outfit, and I got 3,000 head of cattle here worth maybe $20 a head at Dodge. They're too nervy now, and I sure can't chance your touching them off by riding through there.
I guess he's right, Marshal. It'd be pretty risky from the look of them. They're moving too fast now.
Yeah, I know. Just that I hate to lose the time.
Well, you got more time than I got cattle, Marshal.
Well, I don't know about that. But I won't tempt the stampede, mister. We'll ride around the drag. We'll see you in Dodge.
The Elephraganza still running?
Yeah, it is. Mostly on Texas money.
Adios.
Mm-hmm.
We rode down along the herd and back up the other side, about a 4-mile detour. But we picked up the trail again and followed it till dark. Next morning, we found the outlaw still headed straight for Dodge, and all we could figure was that he must be new to the country and just plain lost. Naturally, he'd want to avoid asking questions of anybody. By noon, we were in sight of town, and during the last hour, neither Brown nor I said a word. Finally, we rode up Front Street and got down at the jail.
Mr. Dillon, they rode right in here early this morning.
Gave himself up, huh?
Yes, sir. I got the man locked up in back, and the money is over at the bank.
Oh, good. How's the girl, Chester?
Oh, she's fine. A little tired, but fine.
Yeah. Well, what's his story? Who is he?
He calls himself Scott Cooley, but he won't say anything more at all, Mr. Dillon. I just gave up on him. I thought I'd better wait for you.
Yeah, all right. I'll talk to him first, and then I want to see the girl. Where is she?
I didn't like it, Mr. Dillon, but I didn't see what I could rightly do about it.
What do you mean? What happened?
Well, she sure didn't want to go with him, but that Mr. Carter came here and just the same as dragged her off. She went finally, but I sure don't like it.
Well, they didn't leave Dodge, did they?
Oh, no, sir. There's no train till tomorrow there at the hotel.
Oh, all right. I'll go over there later, Chester. Yeah, so you're Scott Cooley, huh? You're new around here, aren't you?
Well, anyways, I never saw you before, Marshal.
Well, I've tried hard enough to meet up with you, Cooley. You're in trouble, you know, bad trouble.
Marshal, you've got anything to say, just say it right out.
I got nothing to say. I'm just curious why you rode into Dodge, that's all.
What do you care? I'm here. You got the money back and...
And what?
Oh, leave me alone, Marshal. Just leave me alone.
You gotta talk sometime.
Now listen, Marshal. I'm ready to serve my time. That's why I gave myself up. But talk, no. I don't have to talk. Not for you. Not for anybody else.
Mm-hmm. All right, Cooley, have it your way.
Marshal.
Yeah?
Marshal, you... You're going to... See Jane?
Yeah. Why?
What are you going to see her about?
Find out what happened?
Yeah. Marshal, I don't suppose you'd let me out of here just long enough to kill Carter.
Now, you mean the girl told you about
it? I wouldn't care if I hang for it. It'd be worth it to kill him.
Mm-hmm. Tell me something. What makes you think what you did's any better?
Why? You wouldn't understand, Marshal. But you... You do what you can for her, will you?
Anything else you want to tell me?
No, that's all. Matt Dillon.
What do you want?
Open the door, Carter. I want to talk to the girl.
Some other time, Marshal.
You want me to kick the door open? You're asking for trouble, Carter. How do you do, miss? I'm Marshal Dillon.
How do you do, Marshal?
I know you've been through a lot, miss, but I... have to get the whole story from you so as I can file the proper charges against this outlaw, Scott Cooley.
You want to use me to put him in prison? Is that it?
Well, he's committed two crimes, robbery and kidnapping. We'll want him up for both.
Well, doesn't the fact that he gave himself up and returned the money help at all?
I'm afraid I don't gather your drift.
Then let it go at that, Marshal. We're leaving Dodge on the next train. So Jane won't be here to testify anyway.
Huh?
Is that what you have in mind, Jane?
No. I mean, I don't know. Oh, please.
She's upset enough. Marsha, leave her alone.
If I want anything out of you, Carter, I'll knock it out. Now, shut up.
You can't talk to me like that.
Wait. Marshall, I'll tell you all about it, but first...
Yeah?
I'll not in front of him. Make him go out, and then I'll tell you.
All right, Carter. Outside.
Don't you order me around. This is my room.
I'll throw you. If I open the door and find you around, I'll throw you all the way downstairs. Now, get it! Jane, you can talk.
Can I trust you, Marshall? Really trust you?
Well, that's up to you. But I'll tell you this. I know about Carter. About you and Carter, that is.
Then you know how I hate him.
Yeah? But right now I'm curious about this kidnapping. What happened? Why did Cooley give himself up?
Because we decided we couldn't live being hunted down the rest of our lives.
Ah, so you were in on it with him, huh?
No, Marshall. The first time I ever saw Scott Cooley was when he held up the stage.
I'd like to believe that.
Well, very simple, Marshall. I love Scott Cooley.
What?
I love him.
Oh, now look, Jane, girls like you just don't go around falling in love with outlaws.
Don't they, Marshall?
No, they don't.
I did.
Then either you're crazy or you're lying to me. And if you weren't a woman, I'd throw you in jail right along with him.
I'm a woman, Marshal, but I've no objection to going to jail with Scott.
Oh, then you admit you're his accomplice.
No. I suppose it's hard for you to understand, Marshal.
It is.
Well, I'll try to make it simple. You see, Scott doesn't know why he took me with him when he held up the stage. He's never done anything like that before. It just seemed perfectly natural to him. He saw something he wanted, and he took it. That's all.
Well, I'm afraid the court will look at it somewhat differently.
Well, I suppose he'll go to prison for the holdup, but not for kidnapping.
Why not?
Because I'll testify that I went with him of my own free will.
I almost wish you two hadn't ridden back to Dodge.
Marshal.
Yeah?
You said you know about Bob Carter and me.
Yeah?
Well, Scott's been wild, and he's done wrong, but he's never done anything really evil.
Well, maybe you're better off with Cooley. If he straightens out.
You know I am. Don't you, Marshal?
It's no business of mine. I'm a peace officer, not a matchmaker. My job's to keep Cooley under arrest and get him up for trial, and that's all. Now, what you do is your own business. You can testify any way you like. I can't stop that.
Oh, please. Marshal, help me. There's no one else who can.
Yeah, who is it?
It's Carter. Open this door.
Well, gentlemen.
There are four of us here, Marshal. We figure you've talked to Jane long enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I have, Mr. Carter.
You're leaving.
Yeah. Yeah, we're leaving. Are you ready, Jane?
Oh, thank you, Marshal. Yes, I'm ready.
Jane isn't going with you.
I've just put her under arrest.
Under arrest?
I arrest anybody I think needs arresting, Mr. Carter, and I'm not in the habit of explaining why.
There's a law about that,
You're
Marshal.
You're in Dodge, Mr. Carter. Come along, Jane.
You can't do this, Dillon. We won't stand for it.
Ah, you're a fool, Carter. I know these three bums you got with you, and they don't want to draw on me any more than you do. You fed them some liquor and promised them more. For that, they'll do anything but face me in a gunfight. Am I right, boys? Huh? Well, I take it I am. All right, now get out of my way. You go first, Jane.
You stay here, Jane.
Take your hands off her, Mr. Carter. Just step over him, Jane.
Mr. Dillon, I don't like to say anything.
Well, then don't, Chester.
But I can't help it, Mr. Dillon. This is the first time you've ever jailed a woman, and I just don't like it.
Good.
What?
I don't like it either, Chester.
What's this all about, Mr. Dillon?
Chester, Jane and Cooley are in love.
My.
Don't look so dewy-eyed about it. Cooley's got to stand trial yet, you know.
I want no part of this, Marshal.
Now what, Shiloh?
I never did like that Carter.
Well, what's he up to?
Oh, sir, he's drunk and he's buying liquor for everyone. He's making a lot of talk. There's about 20 men with him now.
Where?
Texas Trail. Nobody likes it about this girl. Looks like they'll come over here and try to bust her out of jail.
Chester.
Yes, sir?
Those horses still out back.
Yes, sir. I was going to put them away later.
No, leave them, leave them. Now, will you get over to the Texas Trail and stall those men for a while?
Huh? All right, Mr. Dillon. Come on, Shiloh.
Not me. I'm going to bed.
I got too drunk last night.
Cooley?
Mm-hmm.
Come on up.
What is this,
Just
Marshal?
Hurry it up, will you? Let's go, Jane.
Oh, no, no. Stay where you are, Jane. I don't
You'll do
like
what
this.
I tell you, Cooley.
It's all right, Scott. We can trust him.
Yeah, but I don't know what he's
Scott.
Got. Well. All right, Jane, if you say so.
All right, now, I'll back. Here, that way. Now, come on, let's move. All right, you take the gray horse, Jane. He's gentle enough. But hurry, will you?
Sir, come here.
Come on, boy.
Where are we going, Marshal?
We're going to Hayes City. Cooley's going to stand trial there.
Yeah.
They got the money back, Scott. They can't do much to you.
I know. But there's that kidnapping, too.
I won't testify. That's all.
Jane, you're going to have to testify. You'll be in contempt of court if you refuse.
Then I'll lie. Anyway, I did go of my own free will. After a while, anyway.
That's perjury. But you don't have to do that either. There's an easier way.
How?
Well, before I deposit Cooley in the Hayes City jail, we might just make a little stop.
What do you mean, Marshal? Stop where?
We're going to stop at the preacher's. You know, a married woman can't testify against her husband.
God.
Come on, honey, let's ride.
Gunsmoke, transcribed under the direction of Norman MacDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was especially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in tonight's cast were John Stevenson, Larry Dobkin, and Patricia Walter, with Mary Lansing, Herb Ellis, Jonathan Hole, Jim Nusser, and Frank Gerstle. Harley Bear is Chester. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Tomorrow, a new feature is added to CBS Radio's On a Sunday Afternoon program when Eddie Gallagher introduces the Main Street Music Hall, with handsome Bob Carroll and pretty Eugenie Baird as your singing stars. On a Sunday Afternoon is heard on most of these same CBS radio stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. And remember, daytime is a gay time with Arthur Godfrey on the CBS Radio Network.
All right, that is the, in my opinion, the best adult Western of all of them. Gunsmoke with the Boughton Bride, July 12, 1952. William Conrad, who later played Cannon on television, of course, and he was Nero Wolfe, which is a relative of
my
yours.
My uncle, Nero.
I think. Yeah, he played Nero Wolfe on television. William Conrad probably did more radio than any other actor. He was the busiest radio actor of all the radio actors, in my opinion. I mean, he appears on so many shows, and of course, he was the star of Gunsmoke. Hope you enjoyed that. All righty, WGN Radio Theater reminding our listeners we're here Saturday and Sunday nights, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. I made a mistake and said 10. I just want more time on the show.
I do too, Carl. We've been talking about that all night.
Yeah. And next week, I'll tell you what, we have a terrific lineup next week. It's Escape, which everybody likes, Life with Luigi, I Was a Communist for the FBI. Well, I wasn't, but Dana Andrews was. Have Gun, Will Travel. Then I know Nick's going to love this. The Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show.
Oh, man.
Yeah, just hilarious.
See, now you're singing my tune,
oh,
my
man.
Friend.
Yeah, you know it. And Dangerous Assignment. I have a quick Jerry Lewis story for
please,
you.
Please, please.
Okay, so, you know, I licensed the show from Jerry Lewis, mm-hmm. the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show, and we had talked on the phone a lot of times. This is years ago, and he happened to be staying. He was in New York doing Damn Yankees mm-hmm. on Broadway, mm-hmm. and I was going to New York, and I said to him on the phone, I said, I'll be in New York next week. Can I stop in? Can I meet you? It would be so much fun to meet you. He said, yeah, no problem. Oh, what time can you be here?
You're
and I said,
me,
I said, you tell me. He goes, we'll be here at 10 in the morning on Tuesday, whatever it was. And you know how New York is, and I was late. I was like 12, 13 minutes late. I come in, and I go up to the – it was he was at the Waldorf Astoria.
Of course he was.
Yeah, and I said – I went up to the – I said, I'm here, Carl Amari. I'm here to see Jerry Lewis. Yeah, you had a 10 with him, right? I said, yeah. And he said, well, he's back up in his room. He said, maybe next time.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I kept him waiting, and he didn't like that.
Man.
So we worked it all out, and I got to meet him the next time.
Okay.
But, yeah, you don't want to keep Jerry Lewis.
I had one chance to – I've never really met him one-on-one.
Yeah.
I went to a press conference for Damn Yankees, and I went with Roy Leonard. And,
yeah.
We were there, so it's a whole group of us, and he was only going to be there for 15, 20 minutes and answer questions from, you know, press conference, a bunch of people there. So I get one chance to ask a question. This guy's my hero, Jerry Lewis. I mean, I love Jerry Lewis. I have one chance to ask
a
question.
And I love him, too.
And I raise my hand. Now, are you familiar with this movie called The Day the Clown Cried?
Yes, I am.
Okay, this is a film that Jerry Lewis made. It's a comedy about a clown who entertains children as they're going into the gas chamber in Auschwitz.
Right.
He wrote it, he directed it, he's in it, and it is
never seen the light of day. Right,
never seen the light of day. And it's a very sore subject for him. He sunk a lot of money into it. It was a real personal film. So I'm, as a fan, I was being very sincere, as a huge fan of Jerry Lewis, I raised my hand and I go, will we ever see The Day the Clown Cried? And if laser beams shoot out of a man's eyes,
yes.
And he just looked at me,
uh-huh.
Dead silence in the room, and he just goes, no, next question. And I went, I have
it
one
was my
chance
one
to
chance.
Talk to Jerry Lewis. But I was like really sincere about
so,
it.
You know,
I really.
This proves, Nick, that you and I are brothers from another mother, because we had the same sort of thing happen, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
with
you had this
Jerry
one
Lewis.
Chance. But you got to meet him.
I did, later. But you know how I felt? I was like, oh, my gosh.
My favorite part of that story was when we walked when we walk in, I'm sitting there with Roy, and we're sitting in the front. And this is how great Roy Leonard was. This is how legendary Roy Leonard was. Jerry Lewis, the one and only Jerry Lewis, walks into this room, full of reporters and journalists and stuff. He walks in, he's got a cup of coffee, and he looks around, he looks, and he sees Roy, and he goes, geez, Roy, you still working? That's the legend of Roy Leonard.